All right, welcome back. There's a lot going on here. With respect to the biological attack on humanity, the terminal biological attack on humanity called genocide, mass murder, a real, honest, worldwide Holocaust. That's what's going on here. Do you see it anywhere on the Zionist Western mainstream media platforms? Nary a word. It has been blown out of the consciousness of the Western media moguls. They don't even think about it right now. They're just worried about protecting brave little Israel. All right, so we'll send them another $1 trillion and that'll be it. Just remember, Biden is getting ready to go to the Congress to ask for another $100 billion to give to the Zionist regime running Ukraine. This is all insane. There's a lot going on regarding people who have a good grasp on the COVID inoculation nightmare. I don't want to call it a vaccine. All right, it's a bioweapon, but it's called a vaccine, and people are still confused about that. There's an awful lot going on. We're going to try and wade through a bunch of it this hour. We're going to get to the nicotine issue in a few minutes. Nicotine is the it's being hailed as the new spike protein cure, okay? We'll get to that, so stand by. If you're taking nicotine by way of a patch or whatever, be prepared. You're not going to like what you hear. First up, the World Council for Health Forum on the so-called DNA contamination in the vaccine vials was held today, and that was very interesting. It's a big story. So let's say hello to our partner here and see what she's got on that. What do you know? You watched some of it, I guess, huh?
I watched just about all of it.
Good.
Yeah, it was a panel of, I think there was six, you know, well-credentialed experts in their field, I would say, and ranging from just scientists and medical professionals, and actually we had a lawyer, which was very nice.
Yeah, there were actually 10
and
people.
Ten.
Including the moderators. All right.
And the topic of discussion was the significance of these DNA contaminants that have now been found in every vial tested for them so far of the Pfizer and Moderna. And there are very, very grave implications for people who have taken these shots that contain these so-called contaminants. I think that's still debatable whether or not it was intentional. So it was very interesting to hear people's perspective on you know, what this means, what can be done. But everyone agreed that this finding is an opportunity, a slam dunk, to get these things pulled from the market. These are, you know, not only contaminated but adulterated, and that shows some malice of forethought. And,
oh,
you know,
intent, of course.
Yeah, yes. So if there was ever an opportunity, as if, you know, piles of dead people weren't enough, which they continue to deny, then this should suffice if we have any justice system left.
Were the panelists unanimous in their feeling about this issue?
Yes.
And by the way, the panelists were Kevin McKernan, Professor Bridget Koenig, Dr. Jancy Lindsay, Dr. Jessica Rose, Sukaret Bhakti, Alexandra Henrion Coud, and Associate Professor Byram Bridle, along with Dr. Peter McCullough and Katie Ashby Coppins. So there were some heavy hitters there. So
yeah,
they were
and I will say, what's that?
They were all unanimous and firmly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. everyone agreed, though, we need more attorneys involved at this point to have a legal perspective on this as to how to proceed. But I will tell you, this Katie, who hails from Australia, you've got a real crackerjack attorney in her. She is... She knows her stuff, and I'm sure she could use your support in the land down under.
You're talking about our friends and listeners in Australia. Her
yes.
name is Katie Ashby-Coppens, K-O-P-P-E-N-S. So keep that in mind and give it your concern and your time if you can. She's a good one, for sure.
And it was quite interesting to hear from Byron Bridle again, who we haven't heard from for some time. He is still being persecuted there. He's been locked out of his office at his university now for 108 days. So he weighed in on the issue of the contaminants, and he said something interesting. He related a story of how easy it is to remove these DNA contaminants, that he had a first-year master's degree program student come up with a vaccine in the laboratory using this type of platform, using a plasmid, bacterial plasmid, and then having it produce the mRNA transcripts. And this, you know, rookie of a scientist, as he called him, was able to do it. It's not that complicated. What they seem to be using as an excuse for the persistence of these DNA contaminants, it's been said that it appears as though they tried to get rid of them but were unsuccessful. And
do we believe
the evidence
that?
For that...
Do we believe that? Did they really try?
Well, this is their explanation. Because this mRNA is not your typical mRNA, it's not natural, it's been modified using pseudouridine, and then additionally adding a methyl group to it, and therefore it's now methylated pseudouridine. The addition of this methyl group apparently makes it sticky, so that would have a tendency to create a hybrid with the DNA. And
So
it may be resistant.
The modified RNA now will mix with this DNA contamination, which I disagree with that term. Just intuitively, I think they put it in there on purpose. But so it's making a hybrid of some kind.
An RNA-DNA hybrid that cannot be separated by the enzymes that they used. So that's the official narrative right now. Philip Buchholz, who was the geneticist in the University of South Carolina that gave his testimony at that Senate hearing, believes that because these DNA pieces were in small fragments, that represented their attempt to break them up and get rid of them, but somehow they still persisted.
As Erica believes, or... those little fragments may work just as well as the entire sequence.
Well, the more of these little fragments you have, the more likely they are to integrate, sadly. Now, to be clear, it was only the Pfizer that had this SV40 promoter and enhancer in it, which drives this material into the nucleus and results in the expression of the gene of interest. So wherever this SV40 lands in your genome, it will turn on the gene that it's next to, essentially. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what kind of expression you're going to get from this. And if it's in the area of a gene that's responsible for somehow controlling for cancer, and there are many, this offers a very good explanation as to why we're seeing this explosion in cancer. Mm-hmm.
Disables, sure. This is a big issue. Now, I've seen, in terms of the number of DNA contaminants, we'll just call them contaminants, in these vials, ranging from 400 billion per injection to 200 billion down to 100 billion per injection. What's the difference? Not a whole lot. At that volume, you're talking into the hundreds of billions. You're in trouble. These pieces, and they're whole, some of them, I guess. They're not all chopped up. But they're going to go into your body, and they're going to potentially do some... Here's another avenue of anti-life results from this injection. These DNA things are going to mess up a lot of the human body. It's not good.
We are seeing it. These cancer cases, I mean, we've seen several interviews with Dr. William Mackus now, who's compiling story after story of these cases. And I think now, endless. I mean, I know people with cancer as a result of taking this shot. I'm sure everybody does by now.
go out in public. Without the shot, one out of two people you'd see in public is going to get or has cancer. Without the shot.
Yeah, that was before the shot.
Stir in the shots, and we have between 80 and 90% of the public has accepted or been coerced, forced into, intimidated into taking these shots. And that's going to lead to cancer with an absolutely relentless attack on humankind. And that's what we're beginning to see.
These are very unusual cancers.
Right, right.
And, you know, I keep remembering what Russell Blaylock had said, that, you know, we're going to see diseases that we don't even have names for.
That man was really way ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah.
Very smart, very wise man. All right, well, that's good. So that's something that there is a link under guests, under our names, and you can go and take a look at this this particular event we're talking about now. Very, very important information. DNA contamination. I think it was a DNA component. That's my take. But I'm not a scientist. It's just my intuition.
Well, Dr. Jancy Lindsay is of that mindset as well, that this cannot be accidental at this point.
No.
You know, with all their scientists and their expertise and their skill, and when you consider how many different locations and manufacturers, facilities were involved in producing these things, you mean to tell me that none of them picked this up? There was no quality control department at any of these facilities at any step along the way?
As Dr. Bob Strecker told me years ago, personally and on the program, he said, vis-a-vis this HIV thing, what we were talking about back then, that this was some kind of a spontaneous appearance of a virus. No. He said, if you see a quadriplegic in a wheelchair, dressed up in a tuxedo, he had to have help.
Yeah.
All right. In other words, HIV was synthetic. Same thing with this horror. It's an absolute synthetic death weapon. No question.
And the shocking thing is, there are still people that I didn't get the memo. They're lining up for these shots still. I saw a video.
Oh, you saw a video. That's right.
Yeah. If we can believe it, it was just a amateur video of a long line. This was in the UK, of pensioners waiting for their booster. We're not calling it a booster, though, are we? The new shot.
No, the new vaccine. Otherwise, they're going to get their pensions terminated, right? Wasn't that the threat?
I think so.
Yeah. And I just to reiterate, I went into the local Rite Aid store, into the death chamber, or the little vax room they have there, and talked to the guy giving the shots. And he confirmed that they're still up at right around 150 a day. A day.
Wow.
So there you go. All right. One of the latest being promulgated, and unfortunately, a lot of people are taking it very seriously, is the nicotine hoax, the nicotine hustle. It's Brian Artis again, back to the door with another tentacle on his octopus of mythos. It's crazy what's going on here. Tell us more about this, the great nicotine hustle.
Well, he put out another video claiming that he had the antidote to the vax, and again claiming that this nicotine is it. And I really take issue with that, because it's not, first of all, it's not. Could it be an adjunctive therapy for some people? Maybe, because of its ability to impact the flow of calcium ions. And in some people, that's, you know, might be a good thing, depending on what's firing and why it's firing. Calcium, the flow of calcium ions is involved in that. But it is by no means an antidote, and it is by no means protective. And to be claiming that, I just think is a real disservice to people. We have published studies that indicate that there is no protective effect against this virus or the spike by taking nicotine. His theory is that it blocks the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor and prevents, you know, outcompetes the spike protein for it. Two studies have looked at that, and it's no, it doesn't. And the downside of that is that blocking that receptor with nicotine causes the upregulation of the ACE2 receptor, and that is the receptor that the virus uses to infect cells. The other thing that nicotine is renowned for doing is causing viscosity of the blood, thickening of the blood, and vasoconstriction, narrowing of the arteries. Is that really something you want when you have spike poisoning? It also has implications for, again, I'll say it, calcium. It makes no sense to me why somebody would take a drug, and it is a drug, when there's so many downsides to it. The other thing is that it increases vascular endothelial growth factor, which will cause a proliferation of blood vessels, which promotes cancer. Now, I've sent Jeff a couple excerpts of the deleterious effects of nicotine on in cancer promotion. Not causing cancer. It's not mutagenic, but it does promote cancer. If there is a cancerous cell, nicotine will provide the right stimulus in terms of promoting angiogenesis, the formation of new blood vessels, to feed a developing tumor. I really, you know, to be telling people that this is somehow an antidote, you know, I look at these groups, support groups for the vax injured, and of course, these people are desperate as desperate can be, and many of them have been intrigued by this and have actually tried the nicotine. None of them, I shouldn't say none, maybe one or two that I can recall, had any sort of positive effect from it.
And
when you understand what the pathology is, these people are dealing with mast cell activation syndrome.
Uh-huh.
What does nicotine do for that? Mast cell activation syndrome often results in adrenal fatigue. And with adrenal fatigue, you're going to have problems with blood sugar. You're probably going to be in sympathetic overdrive because nicotine is a stimulant. And then the immune system dysregulation. So, people can make their own choices. I just I get tired of having to address what I would consider bunk. And apparently he's now promoting it as an antidote an antidote to Marburg. Good luck.
No, they're making that statement. I don't know where this... All they have to do is drop something like Marburg headed to the U.S., and people, the fear factor kicks in instantly. There's no intellectual cogitation or thinking about this statement. They just grab it. It's coming. It's no contest now controlling the masses. None. I've never seen more compliancy or confusion or fear. And if you mix those two together, you got a hell of a soup. So it's easy.
Well, and just remember, we have many, many people who smoke. And therefore, they are getting a good dose of nicotine every day. And these people are every bit as susceptible to spike poisoning or the virus as anyone else.
Right. Okay, let's see what's next here. We can go to... we can go to just a pretty good high wire episode with Del Bigtree, which came out the other day. Let me.
This is some data we're going to show right now that probably won't be talked about in the mainstream news. Right. So when it comes to.
Okay, here we go. I've got it queued up now, ready to go. There's an investigative journalist on with Bigtree, and I think he's kind of a co-host. He's pretty good. And let's see if I can get his name. Jeffrey Jackson, J-A-X-E-N. Jeffrey Jackson. And he's with Bigtree here. And the issue is titled, Are the Vaccinated Harboring Dangerous Spike Proteins? Well, the answer is, of course they are. But they certainly promulgated this as a question. So let's see how they answer that. It's pretty good. Here we go.
This is some data we're going to show right now that probably won't be talked about in the mainstream news. So when it comes to this vaccine, the overarching point of this, it's an experimental vaccine technology. Sure, it's approved, but this is something...
We would certainly disagree with that. We don't think it's experimental. We think it is anything but experimental. It was a weapon and it was deployed. All right. So here.
Never been done before, especially on this many people. And the big question here, the one thing this vaccine does is it gives a message to your body to create a spike protein. And this spike protein is what is floating around in your body. The question now with a lot of these issues, myocarditis, cancers, thrombosis, even like anaphylaxis, these grade 3 reactogenicities, grade 4s, what the heck is this spike protein doing after a while? And this is Pfizer's data. Now, this data was sued to get. This is their non-clinical overview submitted to the FDA Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research. So non-clinical overview. This is kind of all the rest of the nuts and bolts past the efficacies. And they say this in here. They said the protein, that's the spike protein, encoded by the RNA in Pfizer's COVID vaccine is expected to be proteolytically degraded like other endogenous proteins. Therefore, no RNA or protein metabolism or excretion studies will be conducted.
Oh, my God.
End of story. End of
story.
We're
making a total mutant protein, but we're just assuming it's going to work just like natural proteins. And, of course, it will degrade. And since we've made that assumption, we're telling you right up front, we are not going to look at it at all. Forget the fact that every animal study we did on these products prior to, you know, getting into this warp speed, the animals were dying. They were having all sorts of issues with antibody-dependent enhancement. And all we can tell you is we have no idea why those animals were having that issue, but we aren't going to look into one of the things that would have been, what if the spike protein doesn't degrade and floats around all of your body and lands itself in your heart and other organs? We're not going to look at that. My God, people, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. This is the state of affairs in science, and your regulatory agencies accepting this, and not only accepting it, mandating on you, having your president of the United States tell you if you don't get this product, that they refuse to even do a study on the protein, whether it degrades in your body or not. You don't get to work. You don't get to have a job in the United States of America. You don't have to have business. You don't get to go into a store. You got to stay outside. You got to stay 6 feet apart. This is insane.
Imagine this. So, and this is before the vaccine starts going into arms in a widespread basis in the United States. Imagine this. You're Pfizer. You present them with this document and say, and it says that. And the FDA looks at this and it's saying, oh, this is experimental vaccine technology. It creates spike protein. You're not going to study the spike protein, what it does? It just, you think it's going to downgrade? Great.
No.
Stamped,
get
it in arms. It's gone. So this conversation now gets kind of communicated in a way into the media. So 2 years later, after the vaccine, you know, the first ones are in 2020, 2022 comes along and you're still seeing headlines like this. How long do mRNA and spike proteins last in the body? You go into this article, it says the Infectious Disease Society of America estimates that the spike proteins that were generated by COVID-19 vaccines last up to a few weeks, like other proteins
estimates.
Made in the body.
Estimate. Wow.
We're just guessing, kind of like Pfizer, we just guess. So that brings us to the booster conversation that Dr. Offit was talking about last year at the ACIP committee. So we have a professor of pediatrics, Dr. Pablo Sanchez. He's professor of pediatrics for Nationwide Children's Hospital of Columbus, Ohio. And he's talking to the therapeutic head of respiratory vaccines at Moderna. You don't get much higher than this. And this is actually the person Moderna chose to be the spokesperson at this ACIP meeting to field questions. Listen to what Dr. Pablo asked. Again, this is 2022.
I've asked this before, and I just don't have a clear idea of how long this spike protein that the messenger RNA in our bodies produce, how long has it been detected in patient serum or tissues, and maybe, you know, even in animal studies. You know, how I know that, you know, it is said that the messenger RNA disappears quite quickly, but do you know, A, first of all, how long it may persist in blood or serum or tissues? And also, do you know what is the molecular weight of the spike protein that our bodies do produce? And I guess I'd say that with respect to transplacental transfer as well. But I mean, this is a separate issue. But those are issues that have, you know, that I've brought up previously, and I'm not, and I really don't have an answer. I don't know if anything new has been developed on those. Thank you.
No, thus far, you know, we have looked at the detectability of spike protein, as well as the mRNA. You're absolutely right. The mRNA degrades quite quickly. The spike protein availability, I believe, is on the order of days, but like less than a week.
Okay. We just heard that in our last program. Program before last with Wiseman saying that... the mRNA was gone within a matter of a few days to a week. That was one of his statements. This woman is with Moderna. She's VP of COVID-19 vaccines, clinical development at Moderna. So naturally she's going to be spewing the same sort of garbage. And you just heard a double dose of it there. Anything to add?
Yeah, it is flat out lies.
Yeah. It's
you know,
it's
the other
do.
Thing that we haven't talked about, but it's been known and mentioned on occasion by some people, is the effect that this modified mRNA has on the ribosomes inside the cells. The ribosomes are what read the mRNA and then assemble the amino acids to make a protein. Well, uh-huh. Because this modified mRNA is so unnatural, it basically breaks down, jams up the ribosomes and prevents them from functioning normally, so that when they go to read an mRNA transcript that's produced by the cell, a natural one, it can't. They're broken. So what consequence is that to, you know, the proteins that the cell is supposed to be producing, the endogenous proteins, the native proteins right. in the cell?
Well, once again, we're looking at a myriad of different ways that this biological weapon goes in and starts to take the body apart, take it down in so many different areas, so many different ways. It's just, it's a nightmare. Whoever put this together was a genius. I hate to say that in the same phrase with so-called vaccines, but this weapon is a stone-cold killer, and many, many different ways of doing it.
You know, everybody should have been suspicious when, you know, we've known about this technology for a couple decades. It never made it out of phase one clinical trials in people.
No.
Why? Well, because of all these problems.
Yeah. And they're by design. This thing was designed.
Well, they have plausible deniability. They, you know, we were in a crisis mode and we needed something.
Right, uh-huh. All right, here we'll go back to this Moderna VP.
But I will confirm that with our talk folks as well.
Let me back this up just a little bit. Hold on.
May degrades quite quickly.
There's a lie. Hold on. All right.
Detectability of spike protein, as well as the mRNA. You're absolutely right. The mRNA degrades quite quickly. The spike protein availability, I believe, is on the order of days, but like less than a week. But I will...
It's just exactly what Wiseman said. Same thing.
We'll confirm that with our talk folks as well.
Like she doesn't know. She's a VP. But she'll confirm that with her Moderna tox folks as well. She doesn't know. She's the vice president of COVID-19 vaccine clinical development. She doesn't know. What crap.
You are satisfied? I have asked this question time and time again every time I come to these meetings. How long does this stuff stay in the body? Where is it going? What is the weight of it? Is it crossing over to the placenta? Because I actually care about children. It's part of what I do. I'm asking it again. Do you think that answer suffices? Oh, you know, it's a really good question. We did kind of look at it. And then if my memory serves me, it was sort of like a couple days. Maybe it's less than a week. But I'll go find out and come back to the next meeting and tell you the same thing over and over again, which you clearly aren't getting an answer you care about. How does this guy end up voting? Did he say, "Oh, I love it, 100%. Let's push this thing out"?
I believe I'm not sure how he voted in 2022. I believe a lot of those were unanimous, so I'll have to double check that. Wow. But I believe it was unanimous, or perhaps an undecided. But you know, it's interesting. He asks, "Do you have anything? Animal studies, human studies, anything?" Right. Just asking for anything at this point.
Meanwhile, you did make $100 billion on this product, did you not? Could we throw about 25 cents over into a little bit of science around it to tell us where is this stuff in the body? I don't know. At least try it on 10 mice. Let's see where we get with that. Outrageous.
Right. And for the people out there saying, "Hey, it's just a spike protein," you know, if you were to ask this on a mainstream media conversation with someone like Ashish Jha, he would say, you would go directly to the product distribution and say, "Well, you probably, you know, billions of doses have been given out and we have robust safety monitoring, blah, 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 blah." But here's the studies they don't show you. So why is this a problem? We have a spike floating around in the body. For how long, we don't know.
The bioweapon, by the way, of this, all of the fear, all of the panic, all of the rage by every single news outlet in the world saying it can kill you, it's deadly, we got to stay 6 feet away from each other, is this spike protein. So when you make a fake one and it's floating around your body, you kind of want to know, how long is this deadly toxic substance going to last in the body that we're putting there on purpose?
Essentially, it's the business end of the virus. And so we go to this study here because this is why it's a problem. Circulating spike protein detected in post-COVID-19 mRNA vaccine myocarditis. Remember, hey, we don't know how myocarditis works. It just happens in some people. Well, this study says a notable finding was that markedly elevated levels of full-length spike protein unbound by antibodies floating around were detected in the plasma of individuals with post-vaccine myocarditis, whereas no free spike was detected in asymptomatic vaccinated control subjects. Well, that's a pretty big deal. But now we have this study, which is a new study showing even something further than that. And this is kind of the latest data on this. The detection of recombinant spike protein in the blood of individuals vaccinated against SARS-CoV-2. 40 subjects. They took 40 people, 20 vaccinated, 20 unvaccinated. They looked at their blood using a mass spectrometry analysis. In that, the researchers could distinguish between the synthetic spike proteins that originated from the translation of the mRNA vaccines compared to people that had natural infection and just had this thing circulating in their body fluids. And this is what they write. They call it the PP spike. That's the unnatural synthetic spike protein. They say the specific PP spike fragment was found in 50%, that's 50%, of the biological samples analyzed, and its presence was independent of the SARS-CoV-2 IgG antibody titer. The minimum and maximum time at which PP spike was detected after vaccination was 69 and 187 days, respectively.
So take a look at that. Hold on. 69 and 187. She said maybe less than a week. That would be 6, at most 7 days.
But she was vice president of research, and she didn't know. She was going to go to her tox people to find out. These people, this big pharma combine that's literally overseeing the death of much of the planet, are just flat out as evil as it gets. Lying to them is just like speaking forward in any circumstance, any situation. Lying means nothing to these people. Nothing.
I think some of them actually believe their own propaganda.
They may. We heard this. For you regulars, you know we've been on this for a long time. And the 187 days study came out fairly recently. But we've been projecting for a long period of time that this spike clearly might be around for as long as the organism, the biological organism, is alive after it's been dosed with this and set up to continue producing it.
I think that's very plausible, especially now that we have evidence that the DNA was there, and that will modify your DNA
right.
Permanently. And then the possibility that the microbiome has uptaken the plasmids and is producing the spike or the mRNA for the spike. So there's a perpetual source for it.
Right.
Shedding, because...
Oops. Hold on. Sorry, I tripped it too soon. All right, we're going to jump over now to Dr. Peter McCullough. Set this up for us. He's going to speak on...
This is just a very short clip with Dr. Peter McCullough addressing the topic of shedding again.
All right, here we go.
So define shedding, because if you aren't part of the quote-unquote anti-vax community, like my assistant Todd is, this is a familiar phrase to them. For those of us that are just getting new to all these kinds of things here in the COVID era, what does that mean? What is?
See, here's another example of how do they do it? How could they get away with it? This guy said, for those of us who are new in this COVID era, well, where's he been the last 2.5 years? And why is Peter McCullough even on a program like this? I get it. It's nice. He's being generous with his time. But for God's sakes, the guy kind of mocked anti-vaxxers, his own assistant. You heard it. Here, I'll play it again. That's how they get away with it. The sheeple don't stay on top of what's happening. And the data is out there. And for all of you listening regularly, you know, we've had it here for 2.5 years.
So define shedding, because if you aren't part of the quote-unquote anti-vax community, like my assistant Todd is, this is a familiar phrase to them. For those of us that are just getting new to all these kinds of things here in the COVID era, what does that mean? What is shedding? What is it?
Shedding means that one has been exposed to the spike protein or to the messenger RNA from close contact with another individual. We know both of them can travel via exosomes, which are small phospholipid packets that can be an exhaled breath through sweat, various forms of body fluid, typically, you know, very close contact. In studies, there was a big project, for instance, called the EVA Project in the UK, showing 78% of women who take a vaccine, they actually have menstrual abnormalities. And those who even didn't take a vaccine, they end up having menstrual abnormalities. There's been plenty of these reports that have occurred. I have interviewed on my show, Steve, expert former INSERM scientist Helene Benoon, and she's the world's expert on shedding. She believes it clearly happens for sure in people who have taken the vaccine within 30 days, close contact, and then now two studies, one in the United States, one in Japan, showing the messenger RNA comes through breast milk. The spike protein may be shedded potentially for a much longer duration of time. It's been shown in the human body now for months, maybe even years afterwards. And that's the rationale for what our recent proposal to actually undergo spike protein detoxification.
Well, the Moderna vice president said she wasn't sure. 3 days, you know, inside of a week. But she's going to check with her tox people. That these people are evil as it gets. Lying. I got to stop myself. All right. So there's Peter McCullough and answering the question from the gentleman who is clearly, at this point, just beginning to peek in the door. So, wonder how many shots he's gotten.
I know. Some people are on their 8th shot.
Including the new vax? That'll make it 8 for them?
Yeah, maybe even 9. Was Peter McCullough saying that a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Hard to believe.
It certainly is. All right, let's see what.
But
else
you know,
we
I
have.
What I'm noticing is that as long as somebody has not had any perceptible reaction to these things, they will keep taking them until
long
they get
shots,
injured,
as they say in France. Good luck.
The scary thing is a lot of these people that are coming down with cancer really have no symptoms. I mean, I was just informed of a friend of a friend who was diagnosed with a type of bone cancer last week. And the only reason she discovered it was because she was out playing golf and she went to swing the club, and the club hit a rock instead of the ball, and it reverberated up her arm, and this caused quite a bit of pain to the point where she ended up going to a sports medicine place for evaluation and therapy. Well, a week's worth of therapy, and there was no change. So she was sent for an MRI. The MRI looked very, very suspicious, so she was sent in to an oncologist. And sure enough, she's got some kind of bone cancer, but they don't know where the primary tumor is.
They don't
and
know.
And she really had no symptoms other than she was feeling just a little off. Mm-hmm. But other than that, nothing to speak of.
Well, crazy. It's getting crazier. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. Okay, let's see here. Newsweek put out a story recommending that people wear masks. Now, for those of you who are long-term listeners, you'll know that we have been pro-mask from the beginning. They do work. They're helpful. Here's a little bit from the Newsweek story. If I can find the part I sent to you earlier. The choice of whether to wear one is now optional, but as Iris, one of the three newest strains, continues its rapid spread, scientists are once again noting how effective masks can be in preventing high infection. Yes, they do work. There are many lines of evidence that show they do, from a clinical population to laboratory studies. Epidemiologist Raina McIntyre, professor blah, blah, blah at Kirby Institute in New South Wales, Australia. But what she says we refer to as masks can vary from a cloth mask to a surgical mask to an N95 respirator. Now, when she says N95 respirator, is she talking about a face mask or an actual face mask with additional filters added to it, a respirator? I think she means an N95 mask. Surgical mask is not the same as an N95, I guess. Anyway, she used the word respirator there. Respirator is something you'll see a painter use or someone working with asbestos. They'll have a respirator on. It's a full face mask or a half face mask with a filter usually on each side, on your cheeks, so to speak, hooked up to the mask. That's usually a respirator. A cloth mask, she says, provides the least protection, and an N95 the most. But even a cloth mask is better than nothing against the SARS-CoV-2, as shown in a large U.S. study. There's that other part here. Here it is. That 2022 study, this is last year, from the CDC, found that between February and December, virtually the whole year in 2021, using a face mask or respirator in indoor public settings, as in supermarkets, department stores, etc., was associated with lower chances of becoming infected with COVID-19. Cloth masks were associated with a 56% lower risk, while surgical masks were associated with a 66% lower risk. Respirators were the most effective, linked to an 83% lower risk. So I assume that respirator here means N95. So do they work? Yes. Is it better to have one than not? Absolutely. Take that 10, 20, 40% increase, 60% increase in likelihood you will not become infected and be happy with it. So that's our recommendation. And Newsweek put this story out. It's up under our names and guests. The two nicotine stories we referred to earlier are not linked there yet. We're getting them ready. They will be linked under guests later on this evening. So hang in there. Okay.
Yeah, I'll just add that I have seen many people who are sensitive to shedding say that the masks absolutely do work. I mean, it's not 100%, but it keeps them from breathing in the bulk of the whatever particulate is that they're reacting to. Right. And that combined with some sort of a wearable air ionizer seems to work for when they have to go out.
I wouldn't leave home without one. And I just, common sense tells you that these masks are far better to be worn than not worn. And all the mocking and everything on your choice and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all, I understand all that. But the fact of the matter is very simple. Masks reduce your chance of being infested or infected with the virus or infested with shedding. So you want to do that? Or do you want to just roll the dice and hope you don't breathe when you're in the supermarket next time? It's crazy.
Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Common sense stuff. All right, we've got 2 minutes left here. We've run through a lot of material. Anything you want to go back and kind of tie up that we didn't get enough said about?
No, I don't know.
The nicotine patches. We will have 2 peer-reviewed papers up shortly. No, nicotine is not good. We've got that one reader we need to do, so let's jump on that right now, the one you sent over.
Oh, okay. That was, just a little bit of feedback on the nicotine thing from, this is in a neuropathy group.
Yeah.
A neurologically injured group. Let's see. Someone says, I just tried the patch yesterday and felt sick within hours. I tried again last night, and it was a horrible experience. I think nicotine is a negative for me. Both experiences made me feel completely not worth it. Someone says, usually patches have high nicotine. Maybe it was better to start with lozenges or gums. First one says, yes, I tried with half of a low-dose patch. I was even more afraid of the gum or lozenge as I struggle eating food most days. So I knew I would most likely struggle with those. Thank you. It's all so much. Someone else says, this is what I was suspecting. First one says, yes, the night experience scared me the most. It sent my neuro symptoms in overdrive. My body has never experienced nicotine as I never smoked or anything. Others may gauge a different experience, but now I'm afraid to try again. Someone else says, that's exactly my concern. Plus, it can inhibit B vitamins and create a deficiency.
Let me read the rest of it here.
Okay.
I don't like this guy at all. That's why I'm going to read this. We don't care for this person. The person who really promotes nicotine is a chiropractor named Dr. Brian Artis. He also believes coronavirus and the vaccine. Is that it? CV and
yep.
V?
You're doing good, yeah.
Ah, I get a gold star today. He also believes coronavirus and the vaccine are not actually from a virus, but derived from snake venom. He recommends buying 14 milligram patches of nicotine, cutting them into 7 or 8 pieces, so around 2 milligrams each, then wearing one each day to protect against infection, or as he calls it, envenomation. He, his wife, and kids do this, he says. The theory is that spike from snake peptides binds to nicotine receptors, not the ACE2 receptors. Nicotine displaces the spike. The stories of months of loss of taste and smell returning hours after applying the patches are interesting. But I don't see how that works for the neuro issues related to immune dysregulation, MCAS. All right.
And the other thing he said is there's no ACE2 receptors in the lung. Are you kidding?
Artis said that.
He said that.
Oh, my. Well, I don't know what to tell you. But it's very difficult to make your way through the alt-news world and come up with the truth or reality as it will serve you best and protect you the most. But do consider wearing masks. Wash your hands. We recommend lightweight gloves when you go into a supermarket. The dirtiest thing you're going to come into contact with on a regular basis is probably the handle on a shopping cart. And yes, the proteins will go right through your skin. Spike proteins.
Remember, yes, they're skin penetrating. Skin penetrating.
Don't forget that. It's not a joke. They're that small. It's a protein. Tiny.
Had the research there, the DARPA research that George Webb had dug up some time ago showing that.
Right.
They were working on it.
Okay. Anything else? That was really good information. I hope our people will listen to these programs a couple times so it can all sink in.
No, that should do it. I would highly recommend taking a look at that roundtable discussion on the DNA contamination. It's very interesting. Really, really a dedicated group of people to bring awareness and you know, factual science, actionable science.
So there are no ACE2 receptors in the lungs. All right, I better write that down. It kind of upends science on its nose. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. ACE2 receptors are everywhere in the body, just to keep the record simple, okay? All right.
The research is very clear that the ACE2 receptor is you know, the main point of entry for this virus. Although it can attach to other receptors and molecules throughout the body, that's the main one for infection.
Okay, very good.
And when you take nicotine, you create more of those receptors.
Not nice.
No.
No.
Okay.
No place like home. All right. Very good. Talk soon. Take care.
Okay, Jeff. Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Okay. That was a lot of information. We'll be back with even more, another hour to go.